character builds. Everyone has them or wants them. We decided to do something unique where we added rules imposed on a character. Our goal is to provide fun builds, which may or may not be novel, to fill an adventuring party niche. We call the segment Twist Builds. Welcome to Dueling GMs. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Anthony.
This is a show for GMs and players.
One about designs and details.
To build a better role-playing community. Let's get into the general character building rules and then talk about our character.
Great. So we set up a list of 10 rules and we're going to always abide by them. Rule number one, establish a theme, declare a concept, and impose a twist.
Rule number two, all characters are level 10 using point buy.
Rule number three, all races and classes are acceptable without explanation.
Rule number four, all Tasha's optional rules can be used.
Rule number five, no homebrew unless it's semi-official on D&D Beyond.
Rule number six, multiclassing is allowed, but must follow requirements for ability scores.
Rule number seven, no magic items unless the class somehow grants them. Any mundane items are allowed.
Rule number eight, all subclasses can only ever be used up to a total of 10 levels. We want to showcase different builds this way.
Rule number nine, established settings will be within the world we've been creating in our other workshops. We'll continue adding things to the world in future episodes.
And rule number 10, these builds are purely for fun and quirky concepts. They may be somewhat optimized, but no guarantees. All right, so tonight's character build. What do we got?
Let's see. We decided we wanted to go with a social-oriented tier, the pillar, social pillar, and a spellslinger combat role. So we came up with that. Your original concept was what?
My original concept was just a straight sorcerer. And my twist was constitution had to be my dump stat. What I ended up with was a sorcerer warlock mix there.
Okay, got it. And then I jumped on to, I was trying a completely different build. I was going to go with some sort of a bard thing, and I decided I didn't like that. And we were toying with a few twists for your character. And I said, okay, let me tackle this one, and you can keep it for another day. So I built a warlock that was specifically unable to use Eldritch Blast as a spellslinger. So that was fun.
Interesting, right?
Yeah. So why don't you tackle yours first? What did you end up settling on?
Okay, sure. I'll start with high level stuff, abilities, and jump into my weak HP. Kind of talk about the concept after that. So I went 2 levels warlock, and eight levels of sorcerer. My race was a changeling with the charlatan background. My ability score spread a -1 in strength, +2 in dex, -1 in con, -1 in intelligence, +2 in wisdom, and +4 in charisma.
A
few other things were obviously dump stats as well. But definitely con, which made my HP at level 10 a whopping 35.
All right. So did you figure out ways to compensate for that with armor class or what?
Not so much armor class, but spells.
Okay.
So my armor class is a 13. Again, not that great. A couple of things, if we're going to just dive right in here. So unlike you, I had the free reign with Eldritch Blast and, kind of made full use of that. I went with the genie patron for my warlock. And then I went with the Forge, the divine soul for the sorcerer's origin.
Okay.
I did that to help compensate if I need a couple of healing spells, mostly for myself, which helps. And also, favored by the gods, if you fail a saving throw or miss an attack, you can roll 2d4 and add it to the total. So I was thinking, you know, defensively for saving throws there. And then the genie vessel, if I need to retreat for an, you know, extended period amount of time when things are getting rough.
Now, I don't remember, is the vessel the type of thing that you can cast a spell, maintain concentration, and climb into the genie vessel and keep concentration going?
Doesn't specify.
Answer is yes.
Right.
Now does it say that it's you go to like a pocket dimension of anything of any sort?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe it would break it then if you leave the plane.
Potentially. Concentration, I don't think specifies that, so long as your concentration doesn't get disrupted. Obviously, line of sight would go away. So I can't like cast new spells to target enemies.
Right. Just wonder if you end up getting anything up that was like a sustained damage or some sort of a buff thing that people would want to hone in target you if you just climb into the genie vessel and then it's impossible to target you. So now what do they do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a definite possibility for
I will buffs. File that away for another build idea.
yeah, there you go. You know, and someone can certainly correct me if I'm incorrect on this interpretation, but. For me, it was almost like if there's just other dangerous situations, like going through a dungeon, I could just say, hey, party member, hold this little vessel for me. I'll, you know, knock on it 3 times if you need me to help fight. Again, another way of just saving myself from damage, whatever that might look like, sure, with a max HP of 35. So the I'll start with the social aspect. Obviously, a little bit high, you know, higher charisma is my main stat there. Proficiencies in deception, persuasion, intimidation, the changeling ability to, you know, change look, and kind of that charlatan background to kind of schmooze, but also kind of be that. You know, that deceptive style can, I think, go kind of a far, you know, way with just, and you know, being other people as a changeling there. With the spell sniping, I made Eldritch Blast kind of the main focus there. So at level 10, you get 2 bolts of Eldritch Blast. And then with the Sorcerer's Quicken magic, I can do that as a bonus action too. So that's right. four different attacks, which, you know, definitely fills the spell sniping, I think, or spell singing a bit. I went with
so remind people in case they missed that particular episode, a spell slinger we kind of defined as what?
Spell slinger is a spell caster that chills in the back and taking essentially pot shots from a nice distance.
Yeah, so either like single target, really, really high damage, or a lot of the AoE blasters, you probably are familiar with the term glass cannon. And you definitely epitomize that with your 30 something hit points. Yes. You don't want to get hit because 1 or 2 shots will take you down, but you want to try to maximize doing as much damage from a distance as possible with spells. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
So that was the missive social spell slinger. You hit both of those so far.
Yeah. The other, thing, with my, meta magic, I have the empowered healing. So extra hit points for, you know, when with the sorcery point, I can reroll hit dice. Or no, I'm sorry, not hit dice. I can reroll dice that do healing for spells and add that back to my low right. amount of HP. The warlock invocations that I went with were the two Grasp of Hadar and Repelling Blast. And I did that to kind of complement the 2 to 4 Eldritch Blasts that I'm doing per turn to help with some control of the battlefield. If they're getting too close, I'll push them away. If they're too far away from other, you know, allies, I'll pull them to them, and helps for strategically staying in the back as long as possible.
Sure.
And I went with a couple of feats here. One was Eldritch Adept, and because I was a warlock, I was also then able to make that the Agonizing Blast just add a little bit more damage for all these pot shots. Again, helping with that glass cannon aspect. And then the other feat that I took was Spell Sniper, where the spell range is doubled. Again, keeping that distance, and I can also range spell attacks, ignore half and three quarters cover. So all those, you know, bolts of Eldritch Blast, there's nothing that, you know, unless they're fully covered, I can hit them. Do some decent damage there with the Agonizing Blast. So that was kind of the major gist. Now I paired that with a couple of things. Because of the genie a patron for the warlock, I was able to pick up Sanctuary if I ever needed that for myself. Sanctuary is a spell that basically helps, you know, prevent people from attacking your character. Cure Wounds from Divine Magic, in case I need to heal myself. I went with Mirror Image just to help with, it's a second level slot there, just so, again, preventing. You'll notice a lot of these are kind of that same nature there, just to help keep the enemy from attacking this character. Again, sure. low HP, you got to do what you can to sort of balance that out. Couple third level spells. I have Blink, so disappear off the battlefield half the time if need be. Mass Healing Word, again, for myself. Revivify, not for me, but just a good backup one in case someone else is down. Again, if you can get another body between you and the enemy, might not be bad.
Right.
Thunderstep was kind of the last one there for, you know, doing some damage and then, you know, getting the heck out of dodge there. Sure. And then fourth level, which does add some interesting flavor and combination to the Eldritch Blast, is Sickening Radiance. Sickening Radiance is if the enemy starts there, they take some damage and levels of exhaustion if they fail their save. So in my mind, part of that control with Eldritch Blast is trying to keep them there as long as possible. And again, away from me, but the longer they're in there, the better it is. So just an extra possibility if there's no need to, you know, use other concentration spells. But, you know, Blink, Thunderstep, Sanctuary are all good ones just to help. I do have Mage Armor and Shield as well for my Sorcerer spells. So.
Got it.
You know, just some other things to help with preventing damage on my end.
Sure.
So I think, I mean, that tried to accommodate for the low con. And yeah, the social spellslinger, I think, is pretty much that in a nutshell.
Sense. Yeah. Yeah, some of these don't have to be like super high concept things that you find a single bit of bread and butter and then just build a few things around it to make it work.
Yeah. So what about you? What but you also had the social spellslinger and yeah. a warlock.
But no Eldritch Blast. So that was I ended up doing too, was my entire concept revolved around a single class, subclass idea and a single spell that was being cast. Okay. It just didn't happen to be Eldritch Blast this time. So I decided to build a Scourge ASMR Celestial Warlock that I have nicknamed the Carpet Bomber. And the reason I have called him the Carpet Bomber, or her, this is a genderless, faceless character in my mind right now. But it's because the one spell I was going to build everything around was the fifth level spell, Wall of Light.
Okay.
It has a few distinctions that are different from the way you would typically see most of the wall spells being built. Specifically that you can build it in any direction that you choose. Horizontally, vertically, diagonally, and so I decided to revolve around the idea of 120 feet for the range, so I can cast it pretty far away. And then rather than building a vertical wall, I decided to throw it on the ground itself and have it extend 60 feet out, 10 feet wide, and then 5 feet, so it covers an entire height of what a normal character would take up. Sure. So basically lay it down on the ground horizontally, so that everybody is stuck in the middle of it, anybody inside of a 60 by 10 foot rectangle. Especially in corridors, hallways, that type of thing. This is perfect trap because they're making a save or taking damage, but they're also blinded for a minute. And they can make additional saving throws if they want, but the blindness is going to help me in my survivability as well. I almost doubled you, but still 73 hit points is not really a whole lot to work with. And my armor class was only a 12. So I ended up with this, abilities array of strength 0, plus 0, dex plus 1, constitution plus 2, intelligence plus 1, wisdom plus 0. And with a little bit of help from a feat that I'll explain here in a second, I got my charisma up to a plus 5. The other fun part of this, though, was in addition to the 4d8 radiant damage for any creature who's in this field, which is nice. If you are maintaining it, you can use an action to launch a beam of radiance from the wall at a creature that you can see within 60 feet of it, and they take 4d8 radiant damage. If they end a turn in the wall's area, they take 4d8 radiant damage. The wall will continue to shrink over time if you use it to shoot laser beams, but it's still worth it if you have creatures running away. However, the additional feature that I added with this character, or took advantage of with this character with the Celestial Warlock, is a fun little bit that they get relatively early on. I was trying to find it. The Radiant Soul, resistance to radiant damage, and when you cast a spell that deals radiant or fire damage, you can add your charisma modifier bonus to one radiant or fire damage roll of that spell against one of its targets. So 4d8 plus 5 in this case, if I'm pew-pewing with the laser beams, or for one person that's caught in the field. So a little bit of extra oomph there. Mm-hmm. And so everything was kind of based on having a lot of different radiant bonuses and additional spells, should I choose to use that. Anything that would do it was doing additional radiant damage, I was going that route. Also with the Scourge ASMR, you can activate something for a minute once per long rest that once a turn, an attack or spell deals 10 extra radiant damage. It's, I think, your level equivalent, extra 10 points of damage to one target. So you're adding, I'm basically getting a plus 15 to one person that I'm attacking with this radiant carpet bomb. So okay. I figured, you know, you can start to nickel and dime people pretty quick. The problem lies then, obviously, in how do you keep them on the carpet as long as possible?
Sure.
So the rest of the build basically revolved around a lot of different ways to keep pushing them back on. So I have Gust, I have Infestation, which like nobody takes, but I figure that maybe has an opportunity. If I can't blow them straight back with Gust, Infestation has a decent chance of maybe knocking them back into it, because it forces movement if they fail their save. Sapping Sting, which just makes them fall prone, so they're going to lose half their movement, so they may not be able to get out of the field. Then the feat that I took was telekinesis. And nice. So as a bonus action, can just physically, telekinetically shove them as well. So all of it was kind of forcing people to go back in, and hopefully there's even party members that can kind of block it off, wall it off, and just keep them either occupied or keep them stuck. And again, because they're blind, they don't really know where they're going, or they don't have a good idea of where they're going. So potentially running into walls as they're trying to run out desperately, running in the wrong direction. And if they happen to run close to me, the two rectifying tools that I had in my my inventory was, first of all, the other part of the racial trait for that radiant consumption. At the end of your turns, all creatures within 10 feet of you while this is active, including yourself, take 5 radiant points of damage. No save.
Nice.
Yeah. And the nice thing is, as an ASMR, you are resistant to radiant damage. Even in like the sage advice and stuff, they clarified, yep, that means you take reduced. It's not 5. You only take 2. I was like, done. That's doable. So if anybody gets close enough to me while they're running around blind and then they start to burn from radiant damage, they may just decide to run away. It's not worth it because I can't even find my target and I'm taking damage without having to, you know, take a save. Mm-hmm. Somebody is able to resist the effects, lose the blindness, whatever the case is, or just kind of, you know, knows where I am or has found me. That's where hopefully I still have a spell slot left. And that's when I cast Thunderstep and teleport myself while doing a bunch of damage to the other side of the carpet. So they have, they really want to get to me, they have to run all the way back through the carpet again to get to the other side.
Nice.
So that was the idea. If they were stuck and it seemed like they were wandering around and enough of them would be stuck on that carpet, the second round instead would be to cast Flame Strike on the exact same area, okay, which is 46 fire damage and 46 radiant damage when they fail a save or tap damage otherwise. And that 10-foot radius, 40-foot high cylinder centered on a point. So I can just drop it in the largest clump of them and watch them all roast multiple times.
Okay.
So that was kind of the basic concept behind that. Yeah. Anything else that I threw in there really was extra fluff. I legitimately built level 10, dropped the wall in, and chose my race, and I was like, well, this pretty much works.
I guess this is it.
I honestly ended up giving myself some invocations. I did the Pact of the Tome, which gave me a few extra cantrips, I think. I took some things that allowed people to use the Book of Shadows, so communication long distance with the Far Scribe. The Gift of the Protectors, which is another thing for the Book of Shadows, that if anybody in the party that has written their name in the book reduces to 0 hit points, they magically go to 1 instead. I don't usually have warlocks that go all the way up to this high of a level, but at some point later on, you get access to an invocation called Ghostly Gaze. Mm-hmm. That once per short rest as an action, you can actually see through solid objects. Like it's dark vision up to 30 feet and it lasts for a minute. And so I was even thinking, depending on the GM and their reasoning for why this wall of light was not able to be seen through. Is it because it's a wall of solid light? Arguably, maybe I'm not really sure, but I just thought the idea of just, I stared into the sun long enough that I can see through anything. So I thought that was kind of fun. Aspect of the moon. You know, I don't trust the moon. I trust only the sun. So I just don't sleep at night. And then obviously the Eldritch mind to have advantage on constitution saves to maintain that wall.
Yeah.
And healing, especially if I was taking damage, the healing light from the Celestial Warlock, you got a healing pool. That's also bonus action. So that was a lot of the stuff that I built around, was trying to figure out, what do I do with my bonus actions if I'm pew-pewing with the laser as my main action? So that was basically the whole idea.
Yeah, between the wall of light and, like you said, the ghostly gaze, it's like you stared at a solar for
right,
and then they became your patron. No, that's awesome. So what made you decide to have like this whole build around a wall of light, and you know, and then from there making it kind of more like you said, carpet?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out something to wall people in and trap them, and mm-hmm. then be able to just like firebomb them with some other spell. And I hadn't even figured out what the follow-up spell would be. But even like, you know, with a warlock, you only have the two slots, so you're very limited in what you can do. I was trying to figure out, okay, what if one, you always got to have like your bread and butter is some sort of a concentration spell. You got to mm-hmm. get the most out of your spell slots, right? So I was trying to figure out, what if I did some sort of a wall, and I was also trying to keep people away from me. That's the other benefit of the wall, right? So a wall, right, maybe to keep people away from me. And I was looking at them, the wall of like the wind wall was going to hurt me as much as anything else, because I'm supposed to be slinging spells and I can't sling it through them or have to go around or whatever. And wall of stone, you can maybe trap people in, but that wasn't, again, going to help me if I couldn't see who I was targeting. Wall of fire would have been useful, but again, wall of fire is what everybody goes with. Mm-hmm. Some of the other ones were just either less useful or too high level. You know, prismatic wall is great, but you know, we're not dealing with that high of a you know, character. Sure. And then I saw the wall of light and I was like, well, maybe. And then I saw you can place it horizontally, vertically. I was like, what, you do what? And I went back and looked at some of the other walls and they don't say that. Some of them are very specific. They have to go in one direction and one direction only. Wall of force, you can kind of make a dome or a cube, that type of stuff. This one's the only one that specifically says you can lay it horizontally or diagonally, which is also kind of weird. I have short fighters in the front, so I'm going to hit them. And then I've got a dragon in the back and I want to make sure to hit him. So let me lay it diagonally instead. I'm not sure the purpose of that, but still, yeah, potentially, you know, useful. Or if you're fighting, you know, tiny people and really tall people, I, at some point as they're running toward me, they're going to get blinded, right? If you go the diagonal look. So yeah, I'm not really sure exactly the purpose of the diagonal thing, but yeah, that was my thought, was, yeah, let's just lay it on the ground. I thought, can you elevate it? Maybe do 5 feet up, because that's the other thing. It could actually just be suspended in midair. It doesn't even have to attach itself to anything.
It's just light. So it makes sense.
But if you do it 5 feet up and not right on the ground, then anything can technically crouch and go under it. Mm-hmm. So it's just better to lay it directly on the ground. They pass through the field that way. So that was the thing. It was like trying to figure out a wall to actually help keep people away from me. And then it ended up being a wall to do massive amounts of damage and blind them, which was the way to then keep people away from me.
Yeah.
And okay. Yeah. Then, it turned into a carpet bomber. So it's massive AOE from what I thought was actually originally going to be protection for me.
Gotcha. Nice. I like that. Yeah, I was curious how you're going to, you know, make this build without Eldritch Blast, because you know, a lot of people depend on that as a warlock.
Yeah, and a lot of it, you go to like Scorching Ray, or you have some other cantrip that you use instead. And again, I was trying to figure out, okay, I can figure out cantrips later. That's not too hard. Let me figure out what my two bread and butter you know, main spells are going to be, and then what do you fall back on? And then how do I boost those things? So once I saw the radiant damage, I already had in the back of my mind, because we've got a character in our main campaign that has recently started doing more radiant. He actually switched in the middle of the campaign based on some story elements from the pact with a fiend or a supposed fiend that wasn't actually a fiend to find a new patron as a celestial warlock. And so I knew about that radiant bonus. I thought, okay, how do I work that in? And then let's just build everything around radiant damage. So yeah, that was kind of the thing. It almost fell into me. And then I was like, whoa, this is actually really cool.
Yeah.
And the save is super high with a charisma at a plus +5.
Right.
You know, the save DC is a 17. So that's no joke, you know, avoiding that. And every time you get pushed back in, you know, then you have to, you trigger it again. So it's almost like inviting people to leave, and then either party members or my additional, you know, spells and stuff, you know, forcing them back in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a fun little challenge for sure. The only downside is, and we've already come up on it as we've started kind of working ahead on some additional builds for down the road, I am tapped out on my celestial warlock. I'm according to our rules we established, I can't use it anymore because I hit all 10 levels. But I've already figured out some workarounds, so we'll keep on seeing what we can do.
Nice. Oh, I like that. I realized kind of just relooking at my character sheet, and I specifically picked Eldritch Blast with the spell sniper feat instead of just taking it with my warlock class to give that spell the one that ignores cover, but it also doubles its range.
Right. The Eldritch Spear just increases the range, right?
Yep. That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes sense. So it treats it more like the sharpshooter feat does.
Yeah. But, and then I also, my other meta magic item or choice was the distance spell. So if I really needed to go 600 feet range wise, I could do that.
Perfect.
Yeah. So. No, I like it. It was a good setup with your warlock. I like the setup, and it's very, very unique. It's fun though that we both came up with control based spell slingers, where if they stick in the sickening radiance, like, was not the forefront for me, but it was a like, oh well, if I could just keep pushing and pulling them back into this zone, like what you like to do with your wall of light, that's kind of like that same similarity there. I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and that's really the thing. People either joke or they're completely serious about the fact that warlock is kind of all about, you know, Eldritch Blast. But man, if you're not using your Eldritch Blast to push or pull things into a sustained spell, you're missing out. There's a reason why you got those two slots. You got to use them wisely. And so it means at least one of them you need to have as some sort of bread and butter, you know, concentration type of spell, and then build your concept around that, even if it's a whole bunch of Eldritch Blasts.
Yeah. No, I sometimes forget, like, Sickening Radiance is a very powerful, if you can keep them there, spell. So I think I might, in a later build, you know, try to make use of that.
So here's an interesting thought.
Go on.
We'd have to maybe look into this. I don't know if you have the answer right away. If you had somebody in the Sickening Radiance and you had the right invocation set up, could you Grasp of Hadar pull them out of the Radiance with an Eldritch Blast and then use the the one that pushes them backwards,
Repelling Blast.
Yeah, Repelling Blast on the follow-up shot and push them back into the Radiance. So are they immediately forced to make a save again?
Let's see, I think it might be similar to the spells where the first time on their turn or start of its turn there. So first time on a turn,
tells me that you could do it on your turn if you pull right. them out and push them back in, so they would take damage there, and then at the start of their turn,
which you're there again. Yeah.
That would be, and
especially with Sickening Radiance, and they're taking exhaustion every time.
Yeah.
But it is limited to one, because you theoretically could set it up. Grasp of Hadar only happens once per round, or once per turn, but I think you can continue to do the Repelling Blast multiple times, right?
Yeah.
So if they started 5 feet in front of it, you push them back into it, you pull them back out, and then the third blast. No, you don't get to third blast yet, do you? You only have two.
Well, with metamagic, I can do.
Oh, that's true. With the metamagic, you can push them back in and technically trigger it twice. But that does specify it can only trigger once per turn.
Yeah, that's first time on a turn.
Well, that's still
you know my character's turn, and then at the start of the creature's turn. Yeah. So,
and presumably if they were already in it, then they've already taken it once.
Right. And then, you know, with levels of exhaustion, it's then at disadvantage for the save, and it just snowballs into,
and then they're moving slower, and so they can't even get out of it. And
yeah, they spend their whole turn just trying to get out of it. And then you're nope, go back in.
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about, where your Eldritch Blast is actually meant as, that's the controlling feature. That's not the damage. That's just adding to the damage. So yeah.
With Agonizing Blast, it's not like something to scoff at. And with two to four beams as well, it helps for sure. But you know, if it couldn't be Sickening Radiance, I have that distance of 300 to potentially 600 feet. You know, I'm keeping my distance, and I guess after I cast Sickening Radiance, in theory, if I was too hurt, I might be able to go into my genie vessel and just not do the Eldritch Blast at that point. If I'm pretty hurt, I can just say, peace.
But at that point, you also have the distance on Eldritch Blast. You can, you know, go 300 feet away, so you can barely see the battle and still keep sniping and maintaining.
Yeah, like I was like thinking, like, you know, what is the viability of 300 or even, you know, with the distance spell, 600 feet? Like, you know, I definitely would need some sort of like telescopic something or other. Just be like, oh, there they are.
You got to have this really open field of battle, maybe using, you know, a bonus action to like aim with binoculars.
Yeah, right.
Something like that. If you're in any type of urban environment, then you've got to hope that whoever was the civil engineer to lay out the streets was masterwork. Otherwise you got no line of sight anywhere.
But imagine being like, you know, in a like a crow's nest or some like tower that you overlook the city. Now everyone is your
everybody is within range. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how terrifying. The evil mage kept people in check for centuries.
Yep. I love it.
Well, other parting shots here on either of the builds?
No, I mean, I definitely liked it. I like that we both kind of approached it similarly, for just being a spell slinger. But I definitely think, you know, your build is very creative, and I like the fact that it doesn't use Eldritch Blast. And that's why I made that twist on you, is because I was just curious what you run with it. So yeah, no, it's awesome.
Yeah, I think we were kind of forced in a couple of ways to, okay, I don't have a whole lot of spells. Both of us went mostly warlock there. Don't have a whole lot of spell slots. And
I only went to 2 levels warlock and eight sorcerer. So I got spells.
You had a lot more spell slots. Okay.
I need them all for defensive.
So yeah, you had no health. I had limited health. I had very low AC, and then I had 2 spell slots. So it was kind of, I need to maximize what I'm able to do and stay away from people or keep them away from me. And you basically had to do the same thing for the same reason.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, it's one of those desperate times type of deal. Right. So it kind of made sense. So we went the same idea. And the social, we didn't really cover it in depth, but social being, you know, high charisma based stuff, it made sense that we did warlock and sorcerer specifically there.
Yeah, true. Well, cool. Did you have anything like extra for, like, obviously I'm assuming you had like proficiency in some of the
Yeah, let's see. Charisma. I had a +9 to my intimidation. I didn't actually. Oh, that was one of the twists that we were originally going to go with, but I think we did that on the last character. So I went completely opposite. I didn't actually give myself any proficiency in deception, although I still had a +5. So yeah, it was just in flat out intimidation. Like, you can't even see me. You're blind. You're roasting alive. And, you know, you'll probably hear this voice calling out to you from the distance. You're getting pushed around by unseen hands and gusts of wind. So right. I figured intimidation is actually my highest skill by far.
Nice. All right. No, I like that. It's a good setup there.
I think my fallback was either just some basic like chill touch cantrips, so that they weren't healing. So even if they were, you know, thought they could get out or could heal themselves to try to get out, then if I, you know, saw people that were, you know, in the process of starting to heal or whatever, just hit them with a chill touch and then they can't regain hit points anymore. And then all else fails, just a crossbow. That was the one weapon that I had, was a light crossbow.
Nice. Well, who needs weapons when you got cantrips?
Well, a warlock, when they're out of spell slots and has no Eldritch Blast, has to at least consider it.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the other fun thing that I thought there was maybe ways to make that work too, is one of the cantrips I had was Minor Illusion. If you have people that are completely blind due to another spell that you're maintaining, and they're starting to run in a particular direction, thinking they're getting out, well, how can you manipulate the sound around them so that it sounds like they're going the wrong way, or you hear the roar of a dragon in that direction, or it sounds like there's an army charging at you from that area? So I wondered about that, and I didn't look too far into the details. I don't know if it can be, it's just sound or an image. So it's not powerful enough. But the other thing I was thinking of was to make it feel like there was a wall there.
Gotcha.
But you need a higher powered illusion for that. But yeah, if you're already down one sensory capability, to screw with it with illusion magic in the middle of it might, you know, throw some people off too.
Yeah. So
that was the other thought.
Does the celestial patron get you Sacred Flame to use some of those other?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So I have the Sacred Flame as well. So yeah, that would, but again, if I'm already doing damage per round sustained, and that bonus celestial damage or the bonus radiant damage was only usable once per round anyway.
Yeah, got it. I was just saying, like, if you were out of spell slots, then you could still maybe sustain that.
Yeah, if I lost my concentration on something and on the wall, and the Sacred Flame was still benefit from basically the +15,
right,
at that point. So you're doing 2d8 +15. That's nothing to sneeze at either.
Right. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And the other fun one that people don't use often enough is one called Word of Radiance. Okay. It's basically like sword, I think it's called Sword Burst, where everybody that's 5 feet away from you gets cut up by like illusory swords that blur around you. But Word of Radiance is the same thing. If they fail a con save, then they take radiant damage, and it's basically everybody in a 5 foot radius around you. So it's just like a small burst. So again, that type of thing, that would be 2d6 to everybody in 5 feet. And then I could apply the additional 15 to one person, or 10 to one person, 5 to one person. And then if they're that close, then they're also taking the 5 damage for free just because they're that close to me.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had a little bit of you know, safety valve there, that it was going to make people think twice about coming in that close if they happen to get there.
Staring at the face of the solar.
Yeah, because the minute that they found out I had a, you know, AC 12, I was toast. So
yeah, Once they put on their sunglasses and start charging.
Yeah. Please, somebody cast darkness, please.
Gotta get out of there. No, that's fun. I now I'm just picturing these two on the same party.
Yeah, we joked about them both doing like divine solar type of, you know, light based stuff, but being on opposing, you know, sides of the divine, which would be fun too. They'd be on the same party working together, but also kind of at odds with each other and trying to undermine the other one.
Right. Like the divine nature maybe even comes from your patron, where it's like, you know, it's more of a business model between, you know, you and your
right
patron, but that was like my, you know, grandfather or something, you know, like
yeah,
but you know, or yeah, opposing angels. I know, and you know, the standard mythos for D&D, like devils and demons don't get along due to their chaotic and lawful natures.
Yeah, who's to say that there aren't angelic celestial types that are also
exactly chaotic celestials? And
when I figured this character with the Scourge ASMR and all of the light and radiant based stuff, he probably, and again with a +5 charisma, probably would be full enough of himself that he would likely just go around trying to convince people he was a Solar.
Yeah, I'm an angel,
bow down to me. Yeah,
yeah, and you, with that intimidation, yeah, you might be able to get a few bows.
Right. And I gave him, just for fun, the investigator background, because I thought that would be interesting. Of he's like the detective they bring in, and when they walk in, then everybody's like, oh no, here it comes. You bring in the intimidation guy with the high insight, decent insight, the high intimidation, and then he will literally roast you in your chair.
Yeah, this is not the good cop,
right?
Yeah,
but he'd probably do it all with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
That was the idea. Yeah,
and then with my character being a charlatan, pretending to be a good cop or just a cop in general.
That's hey, fun. which side do you want me to play today, good or bad? I can do anything.
The angelic cop duo that no one wanted. Here we are.
We got thrown out. They're like, you can't do good cop, bad cop. It's only good cop. This is heaven.
Yeah. We both got thrown out for that reason. I was just pretending to be a cop. You were just a bad cop.
Right. Now we need to find a campaign to run them in.
Yeah. Buddy cops. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. If anybody wants to run a buddy cop campaign, let us know and we're in.
Perfect.
All right. I think that'll do it for us for today.
Yeah. Well, thanks for tuning in. And until next time,
we'll see you later.